day to you all, and welcome to the Ramble Room. This is Diane. Sarah is here. Ken is here. Joseph is here. And Barbara Sewerstedt is here.
Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
She hasn't been here very long, and she told us she was going to come visit today, and we said, you're also doing a show.
And I said, great.
Yeah.
I love to talk about Russia.
Who said it was about Russia? I thought this was American show.
So, I'll tell you a little bit about why she's here at all, because Barbara is absolutely no relation, right?
Right.
But years ago, it's a long story. Maybe it doesn't apply to today, but anyway, her husband was a very, very distant cousin of my mother's, and we ran into each other in Casper, Wyoming, even though his family's in North or South Carolina?
His family's in Charleston.
Okay.
South Carolina.
And you've lived in Boston forever?
Forever. Since 1967.
Wow.
But I couldn't wait to get away from the East Coast once my husband died. And I just moved to Fort Collins, Colorado.
So you went from extreme left to just mostly left.
Actually, from the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah, probably.
Well. Okay. Speaking of socialism, how was your time in Russia?
Okay, go back to your intro.
So, Barbara and her husband were a four-hand piano team for many years.
25 years.
Wow. Okay, and we're still married. I think that's amazing.
Well, we didn't start our career until we'd been married for 12 years. By that time, we knew how to integrate. Okay. And compromise.
Yeah. So somehow, which you'll probably tell us, they ended up going on several trips to Russia.
We performed in Russia six times.
Six times, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we were first invited to go when the head of a sister city in Framingham, Massachusetts, heard us perform a concert of Russian music. He came backstage and said, you know, I'm a head of a sister city group, and how would you two like to play in the Grand Palace at Peterhof? And we looked at each other and we said, this guy's been into his vodka. Because you don't just go over to Russia and perform in one of the palaces. But the sister city on that side in Lomonosov, Russia, the head of that sister city she'd been involved with the cultural ministry during the Soviet period. And so she knew everyone in the music field around St. Petersburg. And it was interesting because when the Soviet Union fell, she went into her office one morning and the door was locked. They had no more cultural ministry. So she became a travel agent for a while.
Which is kind of the same thing, right?
She had some leftover tickets in her desk.
Right. Well, we thought about it for a while, not too long, and we called Mr. August, who was the head of the Framingham sister city, and we said, yeah, we'd love to go. So the first trip we went over there was in 1998. And at that point, the Russians were just getting used to a bit of capitalism. And the country was still pretty much looking backwards at World War II. When we arrived in the airport in St. Petersburg, there were guards standing everywhere with their rifles. And we were thinking, I hope this lady is meeting us soon because we don't want to be stranded here with all these soldiers. Well, it was very interesting to ride from the airport, the 25 miles to the sister city, because the roads had all of these billboards, and there were a lot of Marlboro men.
The same ones we have here? Or were
same
they?
Ones. Okay. Same ones. I said, this feels sort of comfortable. Back in 1998, we still had Marlboro men
they
around.
They were still allowed to advertise.
Yep.
You drove across Texas, you still had men with rifles, too.
So And as we approached the town, I said, why does this feel familiar to me? And then I realized, yeah, when I was young, because my mother grew up in Wyoming, and we used to come out to visit my grandparents. They had a sheep ranch near Crowheart. And the countryside and the whole feeling in that country reminded me of back in the 50s and 60s out here in the West. But getting back to that particular trip, we played a concert in Peterhof, and it was very interesting because we never had had flowers given to us in between numbers. The Russians...
they interrupted you.
after every number and the clapping was done, three or four people would come up and give us a bouquet or a rose or... By the end of the concert, the floor around the piano was covered with flowers. It was very interesting. And I asked, why? I asked our interpreter, why do they do this? And she said, well, because we feel if we wait till the end of the concert and everyone gives you flowers at the same time, you won't remember it. So if we each of us comes and gives you a flower, you'll remember that person.
And did you?
Absolutely.
What was the fourth person's name?
Well, they didn't introduce themselves. Oh, okay. I just remembered, oh, yeah, that's the rose lady. That's the lily lady. That's the one that gave me carnations and roses.
So just as a little aside, because I'm kind of a piano guy myself. I have five of them. When you go over there to Russia and you played at this particular venue, what instrument did you play?
Oh, my husband and I played piano together, four hands at one keyboard.
Right. I'm just wondering what the instrument was. Yes. Did they take a German one into Russia? Or what?
It was a Blüthner.
Okay.
It was a Blüthner.
Definitely a German.
Right.
Cool.
And they had Steinways at the conservatory. Mm-hmm. We did play at the Leningrad St. Petersburg Conservatory.
So you didn't have to play on a Lennon special that only had 47 keys.
No, but the lady and her husband that we stayed with had a Red October piano.
You might want to elaborate on that.
Well, the Red October was a Russian piano, and it was actually a very good piano, although they hadn't had it tuned for many years.
Well, you ought to feel right at home here then.
Well, actually, the pianos out here, you guys, do pretty well. And in fact, when my husband and I would play in Wyoming, we'd always say, the pianos out here are really quite good. Most of the places that we performed, Casper and Cheyenne and Rock Springs, they had Steinways that were in very good shape.
Dry air helps, but we have wandered away.
I didn't know she was implying that you thought they'd been brought in by covered wagon. Or what?
No, I was just curious because you go. I have this picture of you go to Russia, and they're going to talk about the government is going to arrange where we're going to show you all the wonderful things that we have. You're going to play one of our good pianos instead of the cheap German stuff.
I thought you said Russia.
Hey, it's the best I can do on short notice.
Actually, we did not get too much propaganda thrown at us when we were there. St. Petersburg is a much more cultural city than, say, Moscow. Moscow, in fact, our host
said... Kind of like Boston versus Washington, D.C.
Exactly, exactly. So she said, I would advise that we don't spend too much time in Moscow because you'll find it's much more cultural in St. Petersburg. Now, she may have been... a little bit prejudiced, but I have been to Moscow once, and she was right. There's a lot more political stuff going on in Moscow.
Which totally makes sense.
Of course.
So where were we? Oh, they were bringing you flowers.
They were bringing me flowers, and I have to tell you another very funny story about that concert, because this was the performance was held in the throne room of Peterhof.
By throne room, that's not a colloquialism.
No, that it was the actual
throne
room where the Russian czars would sit. This was the Winter Palace.
I immediately thought of bathrooms.
I know, that's why I mentioned that, because you had that look on your face.
They got you in the tub.
Oh, I've got some bathroom stories about Russia.
Well, you know how everybody likes the sound in there better.
Yes, yes. It's good acoustics in the tub.
All right. This was in the throne room. It was a very large ballroom. Looked like a ballroom. And at one side...
No privacy.
Sounds like one of my nightmares.
On one side of the room where the piano was, there was a huge picture of Catherine the Great on horseback. And right under it was the throne. And Peter the Great used to sit there to receive foreign dignitaries. Now... The piano was right at that point. And when we got up to take our bow at the middle, at the intermission, I slipped and fell on my elbow. Ah. And that's never happened to me before when I've been taking a bow. And the audience gasped. There was an audible gasp. And I got back up, went backstage, and... or back into the other room. My elbow was bruised, but I could still wiggle my fingers, so there was no problem. However, the interpreter and the head of the sister city on the Russian side came running back. They were very concerned. They said, "Are you all right? Are you all right?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm fine. There's nothing broken, nothing wrong." And they started laughing. And I thought, what kind of Russian sense of humor is this?
They were laughing with you, not at you.
Well, I wasn't laughing, though. But then they said, well, the reason we're laughing is that whenever somebody important comes into this throne room, and like we had Yuri Gagarin, the cosmonaut in here, receiving an award, and he went to pick up the microphone and fell. It just happens. And I'm thinking, okay, it happened in front of Peter the Great's throne, and he had quite a sense of humor. And I imagine he arranged for the floor to have a dip in it at that point so that all of these foreign dignitaries would fall on their face.
Maybe he's tripping them.
Yeah.
He's still the ghost, there.
Possibly.
The ghost of St. Pete.
Possibly. But anyway, the concert went very well, and the Russian audiences love music and classical music, and we were invited back every year to perform.
We have some of that music. We'll play a little bit of that so you can kind of get a taste of what that was like, and also that you can understand the quality of the musician that we're talking with. We joked earlier, this isn't somebody who just goes down and plays on every cheap piano sitting in the shopping mall and says, I've played all over the world.
No, it was very interesting because these people, the Russian people, are very warm. They once they've decided you're fine, they embrace you. I mean, there is no, there is some anti-Americanism over there. But the people we got to know really were wonderful to us.
And you, hearing some of your stories before, it seems like there were two or three families that you went back to stay with on several occasions.
Yes. In fact, once my husband died, I was told by my Russian friends, please don't stop coming. We'd like to have you. And altogether, I've been over there 14 times.
Yeah, that was another question I had. You said you played there 6 times, but I thought you had been there.
Yes, and
times,
I so. Played a couple of times. I did some solos, and sometimes I would play duets. But after about the first 3 or 4 times without Gary, I told them, I just want to come over here and enjoy myself with you all. So... however, they do have a Stravinsky festival every September, and I have performed and I've lectured on their festival.
Now, your story has left a gap, and we all know you and we know the story, but we don't know what happened to Gary. We don't know how long that's been, so you might elaborate on that. You played together for 25 years.
Right.
And then...
and then he died. He had cancer and got an infection, and he was only 59. So it was...
that strikes home.
It was pretty tragic. But Actually, after he died, a couple years later, I started working for an accountant.
Right.
And that that got my mind off the fact that I had the bereavement.
How long has it been now?
It's been 15 years since he died.
Wow.
It doesn't seem like that
long. No, it doesn't. And I remember.
For me.
I remember being
shot
shocked.
Out four kids since then.
I remember being shocked because my introduction to this was, okay, this is some relative of your mother-in-law's, and they're doing a concert at the high school in Casper, so we need to go listen. I'm thinking, okay, I'll go. You know. And I get there, and they come out, and they're dressed pretty nicely.
For relatives of your mother-in-law. Yeah.
Sorry, well. Judy. Anyway, they sit down at the piano, and, you know, I've played a little bit of piano, and I've tried to play four hands before, and it's
tough.
It is five times harder than it is to play by yourself. And they begin to play, and I was just stunned.
Yes, we decided that if we had started playing duets together when we were first married, the marriage wouldn't have survived. You're playing in close proximity. You're sitting at a different angle than when you're playing solo piano.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to get into the other person's way. In fact, you almost have to choreograph as though, I compare it to ice skating, figure skating, you know, couples, when they're skating, it has to be choreographed. And if you don't, you have mid-air collisions. Your hands will bump into each other. And luckily, most of that happened at rehearsals. We didn't have too much of that going on when we did a professional concert.
I always thought it was impressive, too, because with my history in the performance arts, you definitely get the impression that most artistic people are crazy. So to have two in the same marriage who worked so well together and who didn't end up killing each other doing it, that's pretty impressive because there's a lot of ego involved.
Yeah, but luckily we had learned to compromise by the time we were 12 years into our marriage before we started doing piano duets. And it's something you have to give and take. And it was very interesting because we each approached music differently. Gary was much more mental, much more cerebral in his approach. And I tend to be much more involved emotionally, although he would kill me if he heard me say that. Because he was, I mean, we were very well matched. But he brought something to the music, which I didn't. And so by the time I incorporated his ideas and he incorporated mine, it came out pretty well. But once in a while, we would have a different idea, and we would like the other person's, and then we would be back where we started because I would be playing the way he wanted and he would be playing the way I wanted, and it didn't really mesh. So we had to compromise and get just the right fit.
Which of you was the better pianist?
Ha.
I've asked you that before, but not in front of people.
No, I think we were pretty well matched. Although he had bigger hands than I do. And so
that's an unfair advantage. We don't have to mention that.
I know, but it was like I'm not gonna digress about that too much, but anything that was too stretchy for me, he would take that part.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked out very well.
Well, you guys were a delight to listen to, I can tell you that. And like I mentioned earlier, we'll play some little snippets so you can hear what it was like.
Okay, good. Well, getting back to Russia.
Yes.
We, once in a while, I mean, we usually stayed a couple of weeks. But once in a while, we'd stay longer. We'd stay 3 or 4 weeks. And our hostess would always say, I would like you to stay all summer if you want. But we took her up on it. One summer, we stayed for 4 weeks, and we really got to know the rhythms of Russian life, which is a lot different than our life here. At that point, and this was around the year 2000, not many Russians had cars. So if you wanted to go to the grocery store from where we were staying was about half a mile away. So you would have to buy your groceries and lug them home. And it was not easy. It was not easy. And I remember one year we were there, and my hostess, Larissa, had broken her ankle. And she was having to go to the doctor. Well, there was no taxicab. Or if there were taxicabs, but the people really couldn't afford to pay. She walked. She walked on that broken ankle all the way across town for her treatment.
Sounds like somebody I should know.
You're kind of lady.
So they're tough, too.
They are tough, these people, and there's no complaining. You just do it.
Tell us about the leeches.
I was about to. Now, her sister was the head of the sister city. And, in fact, I stayed with the sister sometimes because I started going a little later in the summer, and Larissa and her husband had a dacha where they raised flowers and vegetables. And they would not be home at the time I was there.
Okay, I'll ask, what's a dacha?
A dacha is a summer home.
Oh.
It's usually quite quite primitive.
We would call it a cabin, maybe?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. In fact, Larissa and her husband Nick had a cabin that he had built. It was three stories. And the only thing, it had no indoor plumbing. So Larissa did not invite me to her dacha the first 3 or 4 years that I went over. We finally got to be such good friends that she asked if I would like to see the dacha. It was beautiful. But when I arrived there, she said, "I'm very sorry, but you will have to go to the outhouse if you want to use the bathroom because we have no indoor plumbing."
The throne room.
Yeah, the throne room. Yeah. And I said, "Larissa, please, we have outdoor
facilities.
I was raised in Wyoming. It was 18 before I ever even saw a real
Well,
privy.
That's what I said. I said when I was young, we used to go out to visit my grandparents, and we had an outhouse. I said, no problem with this. And they loved it. They thought, ah. In fact, she said, well, we weren't sure that you would be able to deal with this. And I said, please. They have the idea that all Americans live in palaces. And in fact, one year, Gary and I sponsored she and her husband to come over.
Cool.
But we had a concert trip when they were coming with a delegation from St. Petersburg. And so we arranged for one of our friends in Framingham to host them. Well, the next year when I went to Larissa's, I said, how did you like over in America? She said, it was wonderful. She said, I loved your supermarkets. They have supermarkets, but they did not at that time have too many selections. When they first went into a grocery store in Framingham, they would have spent the whole day there. They were so intrigued that we had so many different things. And then she said, you know, when I came home, I cried. And I said, oh, no, I didn't want you to feel bad about coming here. I want you to have fun. And she said, well, I did. But she said, you know, we live so differently than you do. And I said, yes, I've been here. I know how you get along with much less. But, you know, I didn't miss not having the abundance that we have over here. Mm-hmm. Especially the 4 years, I mean 4 years, four weeks that I stayed there one summer. It was in a way a little freeing. I felt much freer. And people in Russia are very religious. They support their older people. Families live together with the grandparents. And even though the amount of money that they are given for pensions is not very high, but when you pool everyone's money together, you live okay. But now, getting back to the leeches.
Yes, the leeches.
One year when I arrived, and this was when Gary was gone, it was just me, and I stayed with Larissa's sister, who was the head of the sister city, Marina. Marina had her arm bandaged, And I said, what happened to you? She said, I broke my wrist. And the doctors wanted to put in a metal plate. But she said, I know people who have had that done, and it doesn't always work out very well. So I said, I'm going to just let it naturally heal. They said it, but she had nothing surgically done. So after a couple of days, it started to swell. I said, your wrist is swelling. She said, I know. She said, I'm going to take care of this. So I said, good. She said, we will drive over to the island. There's now a bridge to an island that has a large military base. And she said, there's a drugstore there I want to go to. So I said, can I come along? And she said, sure. So we went to the drugstore, and she said, you stay out here and wait for me. And she came out with a mason jar, about a quart-sized mason jar. It was filled with all these squiggly little things. And I thought, they don't look like tadpoles. I don't know what those are. She said, I have bought leeches. And I said, oh, what are you going to do with them? She said, well, they will take the swelling down.
Reduce your high blood pressure.
I guess take the blood out that was making it swell. So we got back to her house, and she said, do you want to watch? And I said, sure. So she attached. She took about, there must have been five or six that she put in various places on her wrist. And she said, that's all there is to it. I said, does it hurt? She said, no. I said, well, how do you know when they're finished? She said, they'll fall off. They get enough.
Yeah.
And they just
leave the table.
Leave the table. So I was leaving in a couple of days. So I don't know, you know, how long it took, but her wrist is fine now. I've seen her since then.
Maybe there is something to socialized medicine.
Well, it's certainly a lot cheaper.
I'm not putting my fishing bait on my arm.
Well, I think these were medicinal leeches.
No. Is that different somehow?
There's other things that are medicinal, too.
Yeah.
I'm not using that anymore, either.
And I'm always interested in natural remedies, but there's a limit.
Well, I didn't know if I would want to do that, but apparently it's done over there. And it works, or they wouldn't be doing it still.
And that's funny, because we like to hold up socialized countries like that, where everything's provided for you. And, you know, look, if you just let the government handle it, they'll take care of everything that you need. Maybe.
Maybe.
No, not really. Look at what they've done with education. We'll let the government handle it. Oh, we went political. We weren't going to do that.
However, do you guys have questions?
No.
How long were the leeches?
They were tiny. They were about maybe an inch long. Mm. But once they started,
yes,
they became about twice the size.
My mother used to love cattails. And along toward fall, when they were still in their prime but starting to dry out a little bit.
Oh, look, a corn dog. No, wait. That was somebody else's mother. Never mind.
Who invited you? Anyway, we always thought it was a nice thing to do to go get cattails from my mother so she could make a nice fall floral display. Then came part two, which is where you had to go into the throne room and disrobe and look for the leeches. And you don't want to find them.
Wow.
You want to find them, but you don't want to find them. So I always figured that was, you know, this is Father's Day. Thank you for not doing such things for me. That's the
you're getting something. It's just not here yet.
No. Sounds like a threat.
Ammunition is hard to find these days. But that's one of those things that I always thought really showed my mother that I loved her, was I would go get these cattails and then go pluck off the leeches.
Okay. That works.
We might edit that out.
A good son.
We might edit that out of the show, but that's my experience with leeches. And yes, The ones in Wyoming are like 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch long. Uh-huh. But after they'd been on you for a couple hours, they got considerably larger.
Yes.
And then when they're done, they leave.
They leave. Yeah. And she said once they drop off, we flush them down the toilet.
Kind of. So when you lift the lid,
when you lift the lid, you look and see if there's, and how high can they jump?
Or crawl. But I'd like to get back to...
I'd like to get away from this.
to the Russian people.
Yes.
Because I would walk down the street. I got so that I speak a little bit of Russian, but I'm not fluent. But I could find my way by myself. And after the first couple of times I was over there, my hosts let me go into St. Petersburg by myself. I felt really grown up. And every time I'd go in, I'd think, you know, I'm the only American in this city, probably. That was when I was there in parts of the year that were not touristy. Because there were some tourists around, but very few Americans. So one time, the daughter of Marina and her boyfriend decided to take me into St. Petersburg and show me all their favorite museums and places. And so we were together for 5 days in a row. And then on the third day, her boyfriend looks at me and he says, you know, I don't like Americans, but I like you. And I said, well, that's a stereotype, you see. You shouldn't, how do you know you don't like Americans when you don't know any Americans? And he said, well, that's true, because he said, I really do like you. So I thought, well, that's good. I was an ambassador for goodwill here. At least I touched one person. And then I had another experience for about 4 years. One of my friends over there taught English as a second language to a Russian class at one of the universities. And she asked me if I would come and speak to the students, because they learn English with a British accent.
And the proper
way. She wanted them to hear what an American sounded like. There were students there from all over Russia, far east, down south, near the Black Sea. So we talked, and they were very interested in what literature I liked. And I said, well, I really like Ernest Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald. They knew all of these. I said, what American authors do you like? Well, their favorite book.
Is it Tolstoy?
Hank the Cow Dog.
No, they liked Gone with the Wind.
Oh, man, I would have went with Hank all the way.
Margaret Mitchell.
And they liked Mark Twain. Everybody had read Huckleberry Finn.
Probably his best book.
Yes, and they liked Ernest Hemingway a lot. So then they asked me, well, do you like Russian food? And I said, yeah, I really do, because they make homemade soups that are out of this world. And they thought that was very strange that I would like Russian food.
That was a question I had in mind, because I'm not a foodie. I'm one of those people that eats to survive. And I had an opportunity some years back to go various places around the world. And one of the first considerations is, how am I going to survive? You know, I did fine in Germany. I could handle that. But tell us a little bit about Russian food. What do they eat? It's soup, but what's in it?
Okay. They make a very good chicken soup from scratch with dill weed in it. I'd never had chicken soup with dill
weed. That's what my uncle used to call me.
Chicken soup.
Chicken soup or dill?
Dill weed.
Oh, dill weed. Sure, well, I don't think I'd like to have you in my soup.
No, probably not. I'm not very tasty.
But they make wonderful mushroom soup. They're always gathering wild mushrooms, and every time I went to a Russian
they
house, and
like
they
friends of Joe's,
they would have mushroom soup, and I kept thinking, do I really want to eat this? Am I sure there's not going to be toadstools in it? Or is it going to have radiation? Because after Chernobyl, the cloud came right over St. Petersburg. They have a lot of cancer there. You won't hear about that in the news, but
sure.
But they do. It's anyway, after the soup dish, they usually have some sort of cutlet meat dish. Not very much meat, but the way they fix it is, I think it's baked, and it's very tasty. It has a, I don't know what kind of meal they use, what kind of crumbs, mm-hmm. but whatever they use, it's very good. And it's usually made of either chicken or, if it's a wealthy family, they'll have a little bit of beef. They also have fish. They love to fish, and they'll go, 50 or 60 miles away to fish in this stream. Mm-hmm. You don't pull fish out of the Neva. The Neva River is pretty polluted still, so.
This fish has four eyes.
Is there anything else that you would like us to know that we won't hear on the news?
Well, one thing is you should not take at face value any news reports that we are getting from our news media about what's happening in Russia.
Because, or anywhere else for that matter. But yeah. Yes, yeah. Point well taken.
Every time I have been over there and come back home and read about something that happened in Russia, I'm thinking, no, it didn't. I was there. That never happened. And I'm sure that is what they are getting over there about us. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, this boy would have never said, I don't like Americans. One time I was over there when they were having a parade on a day that was dedicated to the city. And at the end of the parade, there were a couple of men with army officers' uniforms on, big chests full of medals, older men. And this was probably back in 2000. And one of them threw his arms around me, and he said, if it hadn't been for the Americans, we would have lost World War II.
Yeah, the Russians lost more than anybody.
Yes.
In World War II.
And they are still grateful to Americans, at least the older generation.
The ones who know, yeah.
The ones who know. And they said, we love Americans. We are so glad you are here in our city. And I was really touched because I'd never had a Russian just throw his arms around me. Usually when you're walking down the street, they don't look at you. Mm-hmm. But these guys were so happy that we had helped them.
Do the Russians watch much TV?
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And in fact, of course, I didn't understand exactly what they were saying, but every night, Mr. Putin would speak. Mm. And I'm sure it was propaganda at the...
He wasn't in his basement in his nappy like Joe Biden was.
I was going to say, I might prefer to listen to Putin than Biden, but I don't know.
Well, they both of the families that I stayed with always had their television on in the evening.
And I guess I should have been more clear. Did they watch much American TV?
Oh, yes. In fact, it was very interesting. One of the ladies had a grandson who was visiting. And he turned on cartoons. And it was very interesting to watch Donald Duck speaking Russian.
He's multilingual, I hear.
Yes.
So, yeah. And a lot of the radio programs they listened to were classical music.
It was Jesus that said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And it is Satan who is the enemy of mankind. And it occurs to me that Satan has divided mankind by propaganda and misinformation, and that a lot of us, even within the United States, a lot of us would be a little closer together if truth prevailed.
Yes. Yes. And you know, the communists tried to stamp out Christianity mm-hmm. in Russia. All of the churches, the big cathedrals, were neglected. They were used for stables, for animals, for warehouses. But since the fall of the Soviet Union, the Russian people have been restoring the churches. And there is a very, very spiritual feel to that country.
When I was about probably 13 or 14, my adopted ex-stepbrother and I would save up all the money that we could throughout the year. And when the fireworks stand opened up, we'd go buy bricks of firecrackers. And then we'd set these trash barrels about 20 paces apart. And we'd put all of our fireworks in the bottom of it. And we'd stand in there and launch bottle rockets and things at each other. And and the loser was the one who got out of his barrel first. Why do I tell this story?
We don't know.
When you get a brick of firecrackers started, it does not matter how much you stomp on it, you can't put it out. And that has always been a picture in my mind of what happens when someone outside of the church or some satanic influence tries to repress and subdue the church. They dance around on top of it, stomp on it, to absolutely no avail. It's going to blow up. And sometimes, I look at what's happening in America and I think, I just wish they'd put the hammer down and the church will just respond like firecrackers. So there's just a weird little aside, but I see that in Russia. I see it in China. We have friends who are over in China who are not technically missionaries because they can't be there. But
they're English teachers.
Yes, they teach English and anything else that anybody will listen to. And it's funny because there are countries all around the world now who are sending missionaries to the United States because they see the need that's here.
Hmm. Well, it's one negative thing. I will tell you a story.
Okay.
When my husband was alive, we were invited one year to be part of a jury for a piano competition that was held in Lomonosov. And this was for, they had for young children up to the age of 12. And then they had a section for 12 up to, they don't really call it high school, but it would be the equivalent of a grade 13. So say 12 to 18. Well, we had to give everyone a grade somewhere between 1 and 10. Depending on their rhythm, their ability, their musicality. So we were judging the 12 to 18 year olds. And we had had, there were six of us, and the Russian judges and Gary and I were coming out pretty much the same. We gave pretty much the same grade to each kid. We would say, okay, he gets an 8, and the Russian judges would have given him an 8 too. We talked about each student afterwards. Okay, so we got to this one young man who was 16, and he was playing Prokofiev's Sonata, which is very difficult. I had played this particular movement that he performed on a graduate piano recital, so I knew how difficult it was, and he did a marvelous job. Gary and I both gave him 10s. And we got into the room where we were discussing afterwards, and the Russian judges had given him anywhere from 4 to 6. And afterwards, we thought, Gary and I discussed this between us. Why did they give him such a low grade? Actually, he got second place in his division because we had given him 10s. But if the Russians had had their way, he would have not even placed.
Wow.
Well, his last name was Friedman. So...
Don't look behind that curtain.
It's alive and well in Russia. It was very sad because he was he had such promise. And I don't know whatever happened to him. That was back in 2000.
Well, maybe somehow he found his way to the United States and he's doing well.
We'll hope.
One can hope.
Yes. I look forward to going back to Russia. I haven't been for 5 years. And because of the political situation now, I imagine visas are rather hard to get. But I used to laugh about this because I had no trouble getting a visa. And I think the Russians have seen how many times I've been over there. And so they, yeah, go ahead, give her a visa.
Going over there wouldn't be the problem. Is can I get back? That'd scare me. But, you know, it sounds like even if you did get stranded there, you're going to find people there of the same sort of mentality, people that you could deal with. And God would fill in the gaps, I suppose.
Yeah, and I have a lot of friends. In fact, one of them said, if anything happened, we would hide you.
Then you could write a novel.
Well, I've heard a lot of stories about a lot of different places, and it seems like, for the most part, people are just people.
They are.
Governments get in the way of people.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problems that we're having. People don't typically just hate everybody. But whenever governments get involved, there's propaganda and there's everything else. And then it's all of a sudden, oh, Americans are terrible or Russians are terrible or these people are terrible. You know, that's how genocide happens during World War II. It was all propaganda. And look where it gets us.
Power corrupts.
But they're just people looking for a good supermarket.
There we go. My last observation is the Russian people are so warm and friendly. Mm-hmm. It's the government that's getting in the way.